Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 7.
Episode actually 7. Last time we messed up. I'm about 73% of the way through Razzle Dazzle by Michael Riedel.
So I'm guessing you're reading it on your Kindle if you're judging by percentages.
Yes, but we also have it on our bookshelf, but it's easier for me to hold it at night on my Kindle.
What's the book about?
It's basically the history of Broadway, and I'm like loving every second of it.
Did anybody give you the book?
Oh, your mom. Your mom gave me the book. But I wanted to read it, and so it was nice that your mom gave it to me. Michael Riedel came into our class
a couple years ago
at
Columbia,
and I just loved listening to his stories, so I was excited to read his book. And
is it good?
Yeah, it's great. It's like everything from J.J. Schubert and his brothers who started the Schubert theater empire. And if you don't know, the Schuberts own, what is it, 17 of the Broadway houses?
Yeah, the majority of Broadway theaters.
Yeah, and then the Nederlanders own 9 of the houses, and it's the whole history of how Jimmy Nederlander and Bernie and Jerry, who were the people who ran the Schubert Theater Empire after the actual Schuberts, how they kind of acquired these theaters and turned Broadway around from like a scummy Times Square. And it was like dying. Theater was dying. And then they talk about AIDS and everyone's dying. And then like they turn it around, and Chorus Line and Cats and Les Mis and Cameron McIntosh, who produced those shows, and Andrew Lloyd Webber. It really makes you happy to be a part of such a cool history.
Did you know that Cats was produced in the tent four different times? Like a circus tent?
Well, you told me.
I told you, I know. I'm just saying it for the podcast. Did you know? They did it in Japan and in Australia and in Germany.
Have you seen Cats?
I've not seen Cats.
It's pretty incredible. It's coming to Broadway again.
I mean, I've seen the photo where you were a cat.
I was Cats. A cat in the incredibly slimming unitard with my head covered in fake fur. But I have really clammy hands, so every time I went to touch my fur head, I got it on my hands, and then I touched my eye because the face paint was like making me itch, and then I had cat hair, fake cat hair in my eyes.
Well, on that note.
No, but it's really a good show. I'm excited for it to come back. It was like,
oh yeah, obviously. People love
Cats. Well, it's a weird show. It's weird. It's like, it's literally cats dancing around the stage, and every cat gets a song, and then one cat goes to cat heaven.
Don't ruin it.
It's not. If you don't know the plot by now, it's from 1980-something.
Cats spoilers alert. Okay, so on today's show, we're doing part 2 of our interview with Gypsy Snyder, who is an amazing woman.
That was a really nice segue.
Oh, thanks. She was one of the co-founders of the Seven Fingers, which is probably how most people will be aware of her. But she grew up in a Pickle Family Circus, which we talked about in episode 1. So go listen to that if you haven't already. She ended up going to circus school at the Dimitri School in Switzerland. And then she worked for German Cabaret before joining Cirque du Soleil's Saltimbanco, which is sort of where we ended up in our last episode. But on today's episode, we're going to talk about casting circus performers, the difference being a woman as a circus performer versus a man on stage, creating shows in Canada versus the U.S., act composition, and her new show, Reversible.
The conversation picks up where we start asking about how Seven Fingers cast their shows.
So if you want to be in a show, listen closely.
And work hard.
Yeah. But before you go and listen to the episode, like we ask almost every time.
I
think every time we ask. Please go on Facebook, like us, share the podcast if you like the podcast. Go on iTunes and rate us. Twitter tweet us.
Twitter tweet.
That's going to be our thing. Twitter tweet us. Follow us on Instagram and let us know what you think of the show or if there are any guests who you want to see. We've had a bunch of really great guest suggestions, so please keep them coming.
Great.
Here we go.
Here's Gypsy.
That's a really hard one. We're like very weird casting people. So we don't do auditions. We've done like a couple and we're always like, this is so stupid. So we don't really do auditions. So it's even hard to kind of talk about like what casting for us is and what we're looking for.
Like, what's a good Seven Fingers performer? Like, what are the things you...
I think one thing that I would have to say sort of pre-casting is that it's not the performer necessarily. It's like the body of our work. Mm-hmm. Like we simply spend hours and hours and hours trying to get people to be more essentially who they are, exaggerating that and pushing that and teaching our circus performers how to inhabit gestures that are revelatory, I would say the main thing is like how the essence of the movement or the trick has a theatrical energy that an audience member can relate to. Because mm-hmm. mostly what people do is go like, this is the trick and it's the wow factor and here's the story and let's like glue them together. But we kind of go first like, all right, what are the things inherent in this movement? Like, is it aggressive? If we perform it this way, is it aggressive? If we perform it that way, is it aggressive? Like literally sometimes it'll even be like what muscle is working. And we'll like look at that and go like, okay, it's pulling upward. Mm-hmm. So is that like you have a goal, you want something, you're pulling yourself to another level? Or is it, you know, forward movement? Like the hoop diving in Traces was based on running through alleyways in downtown, like in an abandoned city that's about to explode or something. But it's like, I just kept saying like, no, it's an alleyway. So like when you get to the end, you have no place to go but to go back. And that just works for what hoop diving is. Mm-hmm. And like barely making it through things. And if you touch it, anyway. Yeah.
But I think for Traces, the most visual image when I saw it that lasted with me, and when I saw it again, and then I tried to learn it, was the trick, the two Chinese poles, and one guy jumps and he catches with one arm and swings around the other end, and then jumps to the other one is even higher.
Yeah.
And I think that really has at least that upward motion, you know, you were talking about there.
So, what you're talking about in the casting, I feel like I do that work with any circus performer mm-hmm. or any performer I'm working with, period. Which means, in a way, I can cast anyone. At the same time, I think we're going to look for people who are open to that. I really like having surprising women in our shows. So I don't know if you, in Queen of the Night, Olga, the knife thrower, who, you know, also was still figuring knife throwing out. Like she didn't have it 100%. And we're like, we don't care. We want it because the energy of just seeing this woman throw this knife and we hope she gets it and we encourage her. And we're hard on her. It's a hard discipline to make really precise. And she's not the most precise individual in the world. But she's someone that I've known since she was really young, and I'm really invested in Olga and Shane.
She's got
really
great stage
invested.
Presence as well. She sells it awesomely.
Very awesome. And there are people who love her and there are people who hate her, but that's why we want her. Mm-hmm. I want a woman that, because I think it's really easy for men to own something like a character, and we're less bound to judge them or say, I like that guy or I don't like that guy. He's like, yeah, he's good. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I think with men, we kind of give, they get a little bit of a free ticket sometimes on stage.
100%.
And Olga, we would get violent negative reactions and incredibly positive reactions. And that was why she was in the show. And that's why I work with her. I like that she's like, this is who I am. This is it. And this is what I can bring. And I tend to find that even women who are much stronger technically or much more gorgeous circus women, you go like, oh, they're so beautiful, and you don't even really get the balls of what they're really doing, and Olga has balls, and I just want some female balls on stage in all of my shows.
Do you feel like it's a lot more freeing to create in Montreal than in New York, like when you were doing Pippin. I mean, Pippin was a, you know, already written
extreme situation. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't do it in the States. And I miss it here, and I love that I get to come back. I love it. Couldn't do it. Not for 1,000 years. There's just a layer of bullshit in the United States to attain something that it's a game that I cannot play. I suck at it, and I try and fit in. And I try and do, hang out with the right people and say the right things. And it just...
Exhausting.
It's exhausting, but it's not only exhausting, it's I can't do it. I can't... Even last night, it was so funny that there was a whole sort of delegation from Quebec. Not the Quebec delegation, but of, Circus. The producers and stuff. People that I love and work at the Paramore opening. And... Oh, I was so happy to see them all. And I mean, even, you know, our CEO was there, and I went, I talked to them all for 4 minutes, and then I gotta go. Yeah. Just want to go hang out with the performers or go see Shayna and give her a big hug. I can't play. I'm very clear. That's not even about America. Sorry, I'm a little bit muddled. But it was funny. I just noticed last night. I am a business person. I am an entrepreneur. Absolutely, absolutely. I want the company to do well. I want to do shows that people will see, and I will say it. I want to make enough money that I don't have to fucking deal with money. Mm-hmm. I am not in this business for the money. But I don't want to have a part of my brain worried about that. So I want to think about other things. And that doesn't mean I need a big budget. Give me a tiny budget. I don't care. I love being creative with what I have, but I don't like worrying about money, and I don't like playing a certain game that I think is required. And unfortunately, I think it's required in the United States, one, because it's so competitive, two, because there's so many good, incredible people mm-hmm. in the States. There's a lot of people who really innovative people who are able to play the game and fight through it and be creative. I can't if I have to fight to be creative, I can't be creative. It doesn't work for me. And also because art, good, bad, or otherwise, is not supported by our culture at all.
Particularly circus.
Oh, particularly circus.
Really anything.
And really anything. There are people in France who are paid year-long to not produce anything, but to think creatively. And I know, I mean, you know, France is probably, they're the most judgmental, arrogant people in the world, but at the same time, they know the value profoundly of having time to think creatively. And I think we're starting, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 years to understand in the United States that science, technology, medicine, the internet, all these, if you can't approach the work creatively, it's not going to advance. And so I think, you know, understanding that 2 + 2 doesn't always equal 4, there's it symbolizes so much more, and you have to be able to see it on so many levels, how to encourage that and still function is really tough. And I think one of the worst things that's happened to this country is this idea that the entertainment industry is sort of like, you've got it or you don't have it, really just burns everybody. Success. I think the main problem with the United States is success, this concept of success. Like, for me, the definition of success is being able to get up in the morning and do something, like to get up and make something happen, mm-hmm. anything on any level. And here, success comes with, like, the way you look, how much money you have, where you live, blah, blah, blah. And
this constant thing you can't ever catch. Like, I have people who I've worked with and friends who are like, when I get this job, when I get this show, when this thing happens to me, then I will be successful and then I will be happy. Which is a...
For me, at one point, many years ago, I was talking with Lorenzo, who was doing the young actor in New York thing, and I said, well, he's like, I need to get a job. And I said, what do you mean? You have a job. And he was like, no, I don't. I'm an out-of-work actor. And I'm like, no. You're an actor. That's your job. Like, auditioning is part of your job. Getting an agent is part of your job. Finding a job is part of your job. Like, there's no actors that... I mean, there are actors, obviously, that work all the time for paid contracts. But for me, an actor isn't an actor because he's being paid to be an actor. An actor is an actor because you're passionate about it and you get up and get excited and write a play, read a play. Mm-hmm. I mean, and Lorenzo does that. Lorenzo, as soon as he's like, oh, I'm not... You know, it's a weak audition year. I'm gonna write a one man show, or I'm gonna turn that one man show into a movie because I don't want to be alone traveling across the country performing alone every night and going home alone every night wondering if I did a good job. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, great, make it into a movie.
Are you raising your daughters in Montreal?
Yeah.
And how old are they?
11 and 14.
11 and 14.
They are fully bilingual. I put them in French school from day one, from daycare on.
Do you want them to do circus?
That's such a tough one. That's a really tough question.
Do they want to do circus?
It just happened this year that they both said they want to do circus.
And are you like,
And so here's how I played the game, the mom game. It's really hard for me. It's really, really hard for me. To be a good mom, but I try. Raphael, Francisco, and Dominic, the Cruz brothers, watch out for them in the future of circus. Definitely.
Amazing.
They're amazing. And their mom, they were homeschooled. Their mom is a crazy, think out of the box kind of woman. And she told me when I was pregnant, we were at the ICO Festival in Florida. I was 7 months pregnant, and I had done my first foyer into, like, directing these kids differently. It was the very first rendition of kind of Walk, Don't Walk, which in a way became Traces, like, 10 years later. And she told me, so my kids had to do a physical activity. They were homeschooled. They had to do a physical activity and play a musical instrument, as well as, like, courses that she would just get private teachers to come in and teach about history or whatever. The musical instrument, they had to play one consistently to 18, and they had to find a physical activity that they were going to do consistently until 18. And at first, she, like, tried gymnastics, she tried karate, didn't like the competitive or the fighting aspect, found Lu Yi, had no idea, like, circus,
he's the circus
whatever.
Circus coach in San Francisco.
Yeah, Lu Yi, master trainer Lu Yi, who really created a whole generation of performers. Yeah.
Particularly for, like, Chinese pole and hoop diving.
Particularly for Chinese pole, hoop diving, a little bit of teeter board, a little bit of Russian swing, was a little sketchy, but I mean, he really brought poles and hoops to the United States, basically, single-handedly. And really changed all of our lives. He's such a good man. So she found him, fell in love with him, started sending her boys there, and basically they had no choice but to do it. And they were kind of in a program that was 4 days a week, 3 hours a day, or maybe 2 hours a day, 2 or 3 hours a day, 4 days a week. And you know, they've tried to quit. They tried to quit piano. And she was like, no, that's your schooling. So, you know, if there's one thing I've heard from everyone on the planet, I wish I'd played an instrument. Or I played and I quit. So my kids had to be musical. And they had to be physically successful at something. And what I mean by successful is, in order to get good at something physical, you have to do it over time. And if you're changing sports all the time, I don't think that really works. So then we had this huge challenge. Where I live in Montreal is the polar opposite end of the city from the National Circus School. Like, really the polar, like, completely opposite side. And I wasn't sure that I wanted them to go there. It was for a while quite competitive. There were a lot of, there have been a lot of female issues with
specific culture.
I love the school. I teach there. Mm-hmm. I love it. But I was a little worried about putting my kids directly there. So they both went to music schools. So mm-hmm. their academic schools are music programs. So it's 40% music, 60% academics from the age of 5 on.
God, I wish I...
Yeah, public schools, by the way. I don't pay for these schools.
My God.
Unbelievable.
That is my dream.
I know. Amazing. And they're creative schools, so it's not just music, it's there's shows and stuff like that. Not very physical though. So then I live right next door to a women's gymnastics incredible gym. They hated it. They both did full programs, like 12 hours a week or 14 hours a week, until Laska until she was 11, Galia until she was maybe 9. And they hated it. They hated it. Like, they loved jumping on the trampoline. They loved bouncing around. They're little monkeys. They loved that. But the whole mentality of, like, if they showed up late, they had to do sit-ups. There was weird... The competitions, they just really didn't
just like it. Like, if you don't do it exactly the way the technique
you
is
don't exist.
Done mm-hmm. for competition, it's not worth doing.
It's not worth doing, and they don't invest in you. And then when a coach doesn't see your spark, doesn't see the mm-hmm. spark, they didn't make it fun at all. I mean, this was maybe particular to this gym, but it was horrible. And yet I was really desperate as a mom, especially like a very hardworking mom. I'm just like, well, this is what we're doing. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm like making them do something they don't want to do. Then Laska got to the age where she was able to do the preparatory program at the Verdun Circus School. And Verdun was much more like not as intense as ENC.
Where is that school?
It's in Verdun, which is near our home. It's where most of our productions are done. There's a big building there, like an ice skating rink that we run. It's like a suburb of Montreal, basically. And kind of now becoming a kind of cool suburb, actually. It wasn't that cool when we started working there, but now it's kind of cool. But the circus school there is a little funky. She did it for 2 years. It was very expensive. And what she was getting in return, technically, I have to say they've got a path to get to where they need to be as a circus school. So we ended up taking her out of that. And their dad was like, we'll do privates. We'll train them on our own. I was like, I'm not going to train them on my own. Like, the consistency you need to get good at something... I trained with my parents. It was hell. We fought all the time. And I didn't... any skills I attained... No, I didn't attain from my parents. That's not 100% true. But it was too much. It was, like, too much of a strain on our relationship.
You need to want to learn it.
Finally, I was having a hard time finding where to put my kids. And we tried doing it sort of like little ad hoc classes everywhere, and it just wasn't enough consistency, and they weren't gaining security, but they were also suffering from what Lorenzo and I suffered from, which is when your parents do it and are successful at it, everyone in the community knows your parents, you feel that you need to be at a certain level that you're not necessarily at. Mm-hmm. So they were judging, my kids were self-judging themselves, and that was breaking my heart. Then something switched this last year, beginning of the school year, and they wanted it. And I remember it was exactly how it happened for me, of like, it doesn't matter if I'm not good. There is a place for me. I don't have to be my mom's kid. I don't have to be like my dad. I can do it my way, and I have my opinions. So now Galia is in the preparatory program at the National Circus School, even though it's on the other side of town. Laska doesn't fit into any category yet, and she's not at the level of the other high school students, so she's training on her own. She's doing acting, hip-hop, trample wall and classes, and finding her own way of doing it. So I'm very happy with where it came to. I do not care if my kids do circus or not. I want my kids to be happy, and I want my kids to be healthy. I also want them to know what it is to accomplish something. So I have a goal and I am able to accomplish it, which is for me the definition of confidence in mm-hmm. oneself. So the consistency of doing circus for me is because it's physical. It's a healthy physical atmosphere for the most part. I think there are issues in the world of circus performers, but mostly compared to dance, compared to sports, I think it is a healthy, wonderful place to raise your kids. So that is why they do circus.
And being like in that weird age where you're like really awkward,
yeah,
and you're like, I, as a girl, you know, like, oh God, I don't know what to do with my body. Like, I'm so, I feel so not confident.
Yeah.
And to have that like physical
confidence
where you feel powerful and strong and you're
physically
like, I can
connected
do this.
To other yeah. people as well. Like your body.
Literally physically connected.
Literally physically connected. So that for me is good. Mm-hmm. And I want my children to have that for whatever career they choose.
It'll be interesting to see what they end up doing.
Oh my God, I cannot wait. I'm excited about it every day. Now they're really into acting as well. They've been doing all these online auditions and it's
so
adorable.
Cute.
It's That's really awesome. Adorable. So then back to the school system of circus. There will always be a problem in circus and education because what circus is an individual thing. An education, you have to have a criteria. You have to meet everyone, you have to judge everyone and move them up. I've taught at the National Circus School and I've had to give grades. And you go through like a whole class, you give their grades, and then you realize you have to revise completely because if I give this juggler an 8 out of 10, I have to go back and look at the contortionist and say, well, this is the scale within which I'm judging this thing. It's really, 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 really difficult.
You judge on a scale from 1 to 10?
They judge on a scale from 1 to 10 for the épreuve synthèse.
Basically, in order to get your diploma, you have to be good enough and it's measured on the
yes,
scale.
Yes, and it's measured on the scale.
So they judge one discipline.
So you perform your act.
Mm-hmm.
And when you perform your act, what I find fascinating, and because we do it in Traces, is first you come out and you do a speech. And you have a 3-minute, a certain amount of words, whatever speech. And
it has to be in French.
And it has to be in French, no matter where you're from. And it's my favorite part, actually, to see people speak to the audience and engage emotionally and to have to justify the choices that you make in your act. They don't tell you what you have to say, but the smart ones somehow set up the act in an interesting way where you're engaged in their person.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone does this, but the ones who do, then when you see their act, you're so much more involved, which is why we had the people in Traces speaking first. Mm-hmm. Even if they're bad actors, you just go like, oh, I know that person, so now I'm related to who they are when they do incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a few people who like will do an act and I'm like, if you hadn't had that speech, your act would have sucked.
Right.
And they don't understand the connection really. It's just, So anyway, so you see those two things and I'm sitting with the jury and the coaches are all behind us and the jury has to evaluate everyone on 1 to 10, but in different categories, like artistic expression, technical. So it's 1 to 10. It's not just 1 to 10. It's 1 to 10 in like 15 different things. And then the coaches also judge, but in their specific disciplines. So like if it's flexibility, you're the flexibility mm-hmm. coach, you evaluate their flexibility. If it's dance or whatever. So, and then when you're on the jury, then you also get to give comments, which I don't know that the coaches do comments, but we get to give comments. And we're always told that that's the most valuable part of, and it's also the hardest thing to do because you've got 40 students. And
you want to be probably constructive and not just, I didn't really like it.
You can't be, I didn't really like it. You can't judge creativity. I mean, that's the other thing is like judging, anybody gets to make any creative choices that they want. I would say 100% of the students almost always failed in composition. Mm-hmm. I found that there is zero composition in these acts.
Composition and meaning the artistic expression? Or like what do you mean by composition?
Developing a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that we're traveling through time and we need to start somewhere and end somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That I mean, anything from like presenting who you are, where you are, what the space is. Composition for me is also the relationship you to yourself, you to your discipline, you to the space, and you to the audience. Mm-hmm. So very few of the acts approach that in any way. And a really good example, and if you want a little tip, whenever you're watching a circus act, and when I say a circus act, it's because like when you're meeting a circus performer for the first time in a space, so it's not like they've been in the whole show and then you see their mm-hmm. act, not like in Traces, but if you're looking at an act, always take note of the first moment that the acrobat makes contact with the audience or doesn't at all throughout the number. This will guide you to know if they've even thought about it or not. Mm-hmm. If they've even considered, is there a fourth wall or not? And most circus performers take no stock in this whatsoever. Yeah.
Well, they're practicing, you know, alone or with their coach, you know, for so long. It's also why I think Smirkus is an amazing educational experience, because I don't know where else you can get the hours with an audience as a kid or a teenager, where you just get used to like, okay, I learned it for 2 weeks, but now I got to perform it 70 times and get that.
Each time, get different reactions.
Right.
And connect.
And connect. But this what I call composition of all those things is the thing that I find that most circus schools are completely unable to teach. Completely unable to teach. And it's almost scary. I was working with Nico and Charlotte, who also do hand-to-hand. They were in Pippin for a while and have been doing a couple of different projects with us. And their act, it's a hand-to-hand act, and they have a lot of sort of outward toward the audience. They never looked at each other until I made eye contact with each other, super intimate, sensual, and whatever. So I was like, okay, I guess it's a choice. And then randomly, 3/4 of the way into the act, they looked at each other, but unconsequentially. So then I was like, fail. Like, what are you doing? Like, if you don't establish...
Is the role of the circus performer to really do composition, though? Like, is that the role of the circus director? Because the circus school is...
But an act? Because this is the thing. When you finish circus school, you finish with one product. I mean, you have a whole baggage of being a generalist, and you learn handstands, and you learn how to juggle, and you have to be available to a director. But every circus performer has to be a director for their own act, or hire a director, fine, I don't care. But when you finish circus school, you have created a piece of theater that lasts 4 to 7 minutes, and...
with the nicest video you have for a long time.
Right? And I feel like it is... I mean, I think the circus school does encourage people to say, this is your oeuvre, this is your work of art. Mm-hmm. So it better... Well, I'm going to say it better be good, but I don't mean that in like the American, like it better be good. It's like...
Better speak.
You better say something. And mm-hmm. for me, that's the main issue with circus performers now in the contemporary circus world. If you want to do art, if you want to make it contemporary circus, you have to have something to say, and you have to say it well. Clearly. I mean, I don't like bad writing. I don't like bad movies. I don't like bad paintings. If you're just going to what's the point?
Yeah.
And if you think that your tricks are enough, it's not anymore. If you're doing a traditional act, hell yeah. They know what to deliver first. Like, I want you to see a little trick, or mm-hmm. I want you to see, like, I want to start with, like, you know, like a juggler who's like, I'm going to start with 11 balls, and then I'll work it down to, like, 2 or 1 or whatever. Those are choices that he's making to engage the audience and mm-hmm. help us follow through on something. And it's false to think that there is not composition in traditional circus. I mean, it is 100% false. And creating suspense or little smirk.
That's creating suspense.
Character.
And then I love when someone doesn't get their trick, and you're like, okay, here we go. And then he gets up and does it again, and like maybe fails, and then does it again, and the whole audience is like, yes. And it's like the tension and like building that in and like being like, this is my big trick, or like,
no, that it's
structured
genius.
So well.
Yeah. And if they're smart about it, which most circus performers are, because they know, I mean, that's what you learn at Smirkus when you're doing 70 shows, like survive on stage and sell the merchandise. Like that sounds maybe superficial, but it's really not. It's really hard. And I think that that's another slight difference between the Seven Fingers and all companies, including Cirque du Soleil. We really also use a lot of traditional circus composition and hold it in very high esteem. You know, that's the world I come from, and I love it, and I use it like a dancer would regard classical ballet. It's like I love it. I love it so much. And like in Traces, the whole like letting the hoops fall, we don't do it on purpose, but we take tricks that we know are not 100%. Mm. And my favorite is like when we do the first section, which is just two hoops perfectly, and then one drop. Like somewhere, I'm like, if there's one mistake in the first session, it's perfect. We don't place it. I don't make them do it. If they do a perfect hoops from the whole act, it's my least favorite.
Do you feel the same way about juggling?
I do feel the same way about juggling. Juggling's a little particular though, because there are very few jugglers who know how to deal with a drop to this day. There was a juggler in the National Circus School. He dropped, there were two this year, graduates, and the drops were like, it's a contemporary act, so they like, kind of like, let's pretend it didn't happen. And I'm like, what? I just saw you drop. Like, look at the ball. Take a moment.
Use it.
And, like, let's say, I don't know, like, let's say you drop it and you have a fourth wall in your act. Like, this one guy has a fourth wall. He wasn't playing with the audience. So, like, what happens emotionally? Is there frustration? Is there what? Use it and then do the trick again. They didn't do the trick again.
One of the things I really wanted to ask you is about directing circus and sort of your approach to creating shows. Where does it start in your head? Is it pre-written? Is it mostly like I have a theme that's all improv and rehearsal? How does your process work?
It's different every time, and it's really important to, like, I have tools that I use every time, but I really like to approach each project very, very differently. And it's funny, like, I'm sort of noticing that there's some very strong themes, and I'd even like to break out of those themes at some point, but I really try and start very, very purely from each experience so that the shows surprise me. Like, I really want my shows to surprise me. Is all, yeah, Reversible, the new show, is based on things, and then I cast it, and this one I was like, I want four guys and four girls, which is kind of silly, like the more silly aspect of the concept, but Reversible, meaning that there's
two sides. It's a very visual part of the concept.
Mm-hmm. It's a visual. It's and actually it's funny, after Intersection, because we attacked certain visual things, and because Traces was so minimalist, and in fact Sequence 8 is so minimalist and Cuisine is so minimalist, I think I'm getting interested in like colors and images more than I have in the past. Whereas before I was like, no sets, no nothing. And even Intersection, like, it was as raw as it could possibly be. This one will be barren as well, but there's certain thematics that are more based on visual expression. So the four guys, the four women, there's walls. There used to be four walls. Now there's only three. So it's not two people per wall anymore, which is killing me, but it's okay. My OCD is kind of just let it be. And the walls are on wheels, and there's walls that are the exterior of a place and interior of a place. So it's the basic thematic of the show is who we are on the outside versus who we are on the inside.
Cool.
And that's something in my 40s that I'm more and more really aware of, how much we create a functional facade to work in our society.
Particularly with the internet now.
Oh, particularly with the internet. And then what's really going on with people, and what's like the insanity that really is within us, and how to accept that and deal with it. It's like now we don't have to deal with these different levels of people, and these facades are seemingly so great and functional, and I'm like, I'm a fucking mess. And I'm very functional. Like, I'm a hyper functional person and I'm a crazy doer. But I go, well, so what do I do with all this insanity inside me? I mean, it's very vulnerable. It's very scary. It's what goes on inside our minds. And it used to be that I would watch people in the subway and imagine their world, like their families and what they do all day. Now, I'm just like, what's going on in there? Like, yeah. what are you thinking right yeah, now?
Your,
why
your,
do you...
Your own personal insanity.
Yeah. And what, or what, why do you, why did you pick those clothes today? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? The, what, and anyway, so that's what the show is about. But it goes one little step deeper because I've had a huge, as I'm getting older, connect with the past and our like our previous generation. So I'm really fascinated with how I became the person that I am through my DNA. But not just DNA, through the experiences. So I had them all over Christmas. I had all the performers interview their families and find out about their pasts. And what was crazy was most of these kids in their 20s were like, I had no idea. One of them found that her great-grandmother was a circus performer, and she had no idea.
Do you assign a lot of homework for your shows?
Writing, a lot of writing homework. Shana does as well. Shana does more than I do, actually.
In order to build their character, what's sort of typical?
Or to have a point of view on what we're doing. So it could be, so Intersection was actual, a lot of writing on their characters. And this one is, I've had them do recordings of their stories and not write them. At first they wrote, they had to answer a bunch of questions. But now I've had, it's all MP3 written. Because I think we're actually going to do less speaking on stage, but more hearing the voices. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But yes, a lot of writing. Shana turned me on to, when we were in our early 20s, The Artist Way. Have you ever heard that
No.
book? Total creative. It's like, it was in the 80s, how to make yourself more a creative person. And it's like a 12-week program that you do all, you get up and you have to write the first thing in the morning before you speak or eat or anything. You have to write 3 full pages, like by hand, handwritten. And you do that for 12 weeks. And that's just one of the many, many exercises. It's one downfall. I mean, I would recommend the book to anyone who wants to engage and say something through art.
You jumped with the gun on my final question.
Oh, no. Go, tell me.
Yeah, so what the question was, it's going to be like, what, if there's anything people should read or listen to, maybe 3 things that you would recommend a circus artist or an artist in general that you value... you know, take a listen. This book is clearly an example of that.
I would say that The Artist's Way is, and I want to be clear, Shana Carroll is the one who turned me on to this book. I think it's still valid. It has a lot of God talk. It uses God as it says it's not religious, but it uses God as that other, a sort of a spiritual energy. And I'm a very spiritual, there's the hand quotes again, the air quotes. So I warn people about that language because a couple of people I've given the book to have gone like, what's all this God talk? So just get past that, like just not ignore it, but find your perspective on it and make it up for yourself. So I think that that's a great book to do, especially if you're in an in-between project kind of thing, or like I did it on tour, it was great. So I'm like in a project that's just running and rolling. I'm not thinking about it anymore. This was a great nourishing thing. I would say, I mean, everyone has to see Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Which I think for you guys as Americans is kind of a given. But it blows my mind. Like when I'm at the National Circus School, I'm like, okay, everybody needs to see West Side Story. Everybody needs to see Singing in the Rain. Those were like, I grew up watching those.
And West Side Story really changed the landscape of theater, kind of, you know, it was like this, oh wow, this can be more
absolutely.
Than just a musical.
Absolutely.
I did a whole project on West Side Story.
There you go. So those were things that like, for me, and it's so funny because now obviously having been Pippin or now the involvement with Paramore, the importance of musical theater is how to take a human story and go so far that you're actually standing in the street singing and everybody believes it and buys it and finds it
cool.
Well,
the stakes are so high that you like can't express yourself except to sing.
Sing and dance. Yeah. So I use that in circus all the time. We use it in circus all the time. So even if musical theater is the cheesiest thing ever and I don't reproduce that in circus, the principle is very, very important to me. Like, you know, and musicals tend to be very concrete, and I don't work in a concrete world, but it's absolutely under everything I do. So in Traces or in any of our shows, no matter how abstract we get or how image-oriented we get, the story is 100%. There's a movie in our minds the whole time. You might not get it, but I have it always, like always. So those are two films that, you know, I were the first VHS cassettes that I had as a kid. And
maybe one more thing.
Well, there was one more thing. Oh, there's too many.
Is there a circus that you would recommend people, if they have the chance to see, go see besides Seven Fingers?
Oh, hell, crap. I mean, Le Midiate. I was just here speaking.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Midiate. That was at NYU just a while ago.
Yeah, they were in Montreal, too, and now that show's done. I think it's... That was a very evocative piece of physical theater where my mind was working on its own. Like, I was interpreting it, I'm sure, very different from the person next to me. And I think that that, for the future of where we're going in contemporary circus, to see something so deeply well-rooted, like the layers were so deep and so strong, and yet some people could see it and go, like, what the hell is this fucking mess? It was so precise and so rich in imagery and context and meaning.
Detail.
And detail. Everything from global warming to OCD to solitude to... Yeah, I just... It was like all in there and so deeply inbred and very clown and very in the now. And so I think, you know, from going from the old school musical theater to that range, I think it's really important for people now.
Awesome. Last question.
Okay.
If you weren't going to do circus, what do you think you would have ended up doing? Totally in a different, in another parallel universe.
I think I'd probably run a bed and breakfast.
Ooh.
Nice. Any particular location?
Now I'm really in love with the Berkshires. We have a farm in the Berkshires, and I really love being there, but that's a very specific location. And I'm definitely coming back to my American roots. Like, Europe was always too European. Like, I loved it, and it had a shelf life for me. Maybe... Even though I hate cold, I really, really hate cold, and, like, someday I could see myself, like, buying a place in Florida. No, I will never do that. I will never do that. But I have in my house a sort of an extension that's a little apartment that I rent to people, circus performers. It's not Airbnb or anything, but I just rent it out. And I love always when the person leaves, cleaning it and setting it up for the next person. I really love doing that.
Awesome.
Isn't that random?
You can come to my apartment and do that.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Every time I leave, just clean it.
Well, and if you guys ever come to Montreal and you want to rent a little place, I literally
Perfect because we had a horrible Airbnb experience. And then we're like, we're getting a hotel.
Yeah.
So just wait. Wait, Gypsy.
There you go. Knock, knock, knock.
We're here. I'll make sure it's nice and messy for you.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being the podcast.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Well, that concludes the two parts of Gypsy Snyder.
You made it through.
It's not they made it through. She's incredibly interesting.
I know. I'm always impressed, though, when people tell me they listen to all the way to the end of any of these podcasts.
Yeah, me too.
If you enjoyed the show, please share it on Facebook, like us, Twitter, tweet us, follow us on Instagram. Please email any of your guest suggestions or comments to hello@hideawaycircus.com.
Every time we ask, I always feel like I'm like asking the cool kids, like, please like me. Please, like, can I sit at your table at lunch?
Please let us sit at your table.
Please let us join your table.